Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. You know, we tell people all the time, follow us on Instagram, at It's The Real, Facebook, whatever, It's The Real.
It's at It's The Real. Why are you
I'm not on Facebook.
Like,
I'm just saying, I don't, you know, what are we? What are we really?
At It's The Real. None of this is difficult.
Twitter, we're at It's The Real. But here's why I bring this up, Jeff. Because now, do we have to warn people, if you're going to follow us on Twitter, understand the content is strictly about documentaries.
Well, okay, you're saying that because I've been tweeting about documentaries.
Yeah.
I'm not tweeting about other things. And you're just like, hey, you want to know what? Follow us for intelligence about documentaries.
All right. Just documentary talk.
Yeah, just documentary talk.
If you're looking for us.
But Wale really led the way, because Wale gave up on talking about rap, talking about wrestling, talking about whatever else.
Yeah.
Now he is strictly talking about food, mostly ramen and pho.
Pho.
Mostly ramen and pho.
Yeah.
Also, I think halal maybe, but okay. Mostly ramen and pho.
Yeah. Pho out of here, you know?
Yeah. And so, I'm talking about documentaries. We just saw the one with Wu-Tang.
It's a great documentary.
Of Mics and Men on Showtime.
Yep. 4-part series directed by Sasha Jenkins from the Ego Trip Collective.
And it's great. There's some ups. There's some downs.
Yeah.
There's way more members of Wu-Tang than you might remember.
You know what? I was surprised because there were less than I remember.
Well, yes, sure.
I remember names that I can't even imagine right now.
Yeah, like, Jerry, yes. The biologist or whatever.
He's my favorite member of Wu-Tang. It actually makes me think that a year and a half ago, whenever Grammys was in New York,
mm-hmm.
the Roots were performing all week long. They had a residency at the Gramercy Theater,
mm-hmm.
and we went to go check it out and say hi to people and enjoy the festivities.
Well, we were there not just like one or two. We were there all week.
We were there. We had a residency.
We had a residency
at the Gramercy Theater with the Roots.
The Roots happened to be there.
Yeah. And one of the nights we were approached by U-God's manager. U-God's manager, I guess we had met previously.
Sure.
And he came up and was like, hey, here is a signed galley copy of U-God's upcoming book called Raw.
Mm-hmm.
About his time in Wu-Tang and all the behind-the-scenes drama, the ups and downs. And I want you guys to have this.
And U-God was not on board. Could not have been less
U-God
on board.
U-God was like, why do these guys deserve it?
And U-God was so not on board, he was on a different board.
To the manager's credit, he was like, Eric and Jeff, it's The Real. They've done a lot of great things.
Right. He listed like our whole resume. And U-God was just like, this is my book. This is my only book.
Yeah.
This is my only copy of the book. Don't fuck it up.
And by the way, I did not fuck it up. I held on to that thing like it was gold. I also looked like a student. I was there at the concert with my book.
You looked very smart.
It felt like after school. But here's the thing, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to admit this right now. In that year and a half or however long it's been, I have not read that book. It just sits there behind you on that bookshelf.
Well, all of our books are fake.
So maybe U-God was right.
That we didn't deserve it?
We didn't deserve it.
I'll say this about U-God. He comes off so well in the documentary. So great. He is one of the stars of the documentary. I also saw Capadonna.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that he is one of the stars. I mean, like, it's...
Who's not a star? They're all stars.
Who's not a star of documentary?
Maybe RZA looks a little worse off. Maybe a little more controlling. Divine, maybe.
Divine does not.
Comes off a little bad. But also,
I feel like Divine is a little misunderstood. I feel like.
Sure.
You wonder what?
I'm not wrong.
The cops of Staten Island do not come off great.
Giuliani.
Yeah, Giuliani does not come off great.
Yeah, but these, again, not surprises.
No, but you want. I mean, like, you know, I feel like if you're looking for a surprise Giuliani turn, then I would just look at our current administration, how this dude is just like, you want to know what? Fuck it. Let's go to the Ukraine and get some help over there to see what happens
just
with Trump.
Nuts. Just that's, I guess they're both truth, but 2019 truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah. Just
anyway,
this stupid world.
Go check out that documentary. What were the other
also,
ones we've seen?
Because we're not playing favorites
with
our premium cable channels. We also saw the upcoming Muhammad Ali documentary.
Where can you find that, Jeff?
On HBO.
There you go.
Subscribe to everything.
I believe that debuts tomorrow or today, whenever you're listening to this, the 14th of May.
Yeah.
It's called What's My Name? And
it is so good.
It's great.
Again, not a surprise that a Muhammad Ali documentary directed by Antoine Fuqua would be amazing.
You know who comes off poorly in that?
The Staten Island cops.
Giuliani.
Oh, yeah.
No, do check that out. What's really cool about the way that one was put together is that it was told via all of Muhammad Ali's actual
social media
interviews. Yeah, it's just tweets read out loud. Shout out to everyone behind that: LeBron, Maverick Carter, Robot, Spring
Hill, the whole gang, all of our friends.
You know,
yeah, LeBron,
really, really excellent. Really, really great and important and timeless. Go check that out. Go check out Of Mics and Men.
Yep.
And any other documentaries you should pay attention to right now?
I always like the documentaries that are on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Just in general?
I love a good Netflix documentary.
Do you want to get into Wale's Lane and talk about some ramen right now?
I want to talk about pho. Some pho.
Jeff?
No, I actually, by the way, and this is pulling back the curtain a little bit.
Yes.
It's 3:30 when we're recording this.
Yeah.
I haven't eaten all day, and I could really use some ramen.
Or?
Well, I don't know where there's a good place to get pho around us, but I would happily get some ramen.
Okay. Will you promise to update us as to how this progresses next week?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, as we do this whole intro and outro? Just, sure.
Do you want to do, like, a half an hour thing where you go out and you come back with the food and say, it's fine.
Yeah.
Jeff, who's on the podcast today?
Today on the podcast is our friend Cissé.
Cissé from Places Plus Faces.
Places and Faces.
It is not
how
just
we humans normally call it. We usually call it Places and Faces, not Places Plus Faces.
He says Plus Faces.
Does he really?
He does. So,
oh my God.
I know.
Oh,
there
no.
you go, Jeff.
Fuck.
Anyway,
fuck.
Cissé, he's not just a photographer. He's not just a clothing designer. He, you know, a lot of people, including us, use this as a movement in sort of glowing terms. And a lot of the times it's not really meant in that way.
What, like a movement is like a bowel movement? Like a BM?
No, it's like inertia.
Oh, yeah.
This is
just a sluggish pace.
This is no. What they have built is really extraordinary. I'm sure you've seen their clothes around. I'm sure you've been to their concerts. I'm sure that you have felt what they have brought to the table, whether it's photographs of Kanye or Drake or the ASAPs or just putting on shows around the world in Tokyo, in London, in New York, and maybe, just maybe,
they might let us come to Brazil.
That's the one.
Yeah.
But what's really cool is we get into the details of how you build a brand.
Yes.
Or rather, how they build their brand. And what's cool about that is that Cissé and his partner Souls have built this brand in a truly...
in a smart way.
I mean,
I think that's the way to put it, where it's, you know, they built it up step by step, but they also knocked down a bunch of things on the way.
Shout out to Cissé and Souls. Great dudes. Great brand.
So British.
Very, very British. Although, maybe less Cissé, British than you think.
Yeah, Cissé is less British than I thought.
A fantastic episode. Jeff, when do you want to get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Wrist on Froze, a.k.a. Arthritis.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Off-White, a.k.a. in Rehab.
Yo, it's AKA.
Here's your third favorite podcast to waste time with. It's The Real. Cissé, what's happening?
What's good? I'm Cissé from Places Plus Faces.
Oh, now you want to say that. Yeah.
To build it up.
Yeah.
Let them know straight away. Look, Tony Stark here.
Right, exactly. So, well, listen, you've done superhuman things since you landed in New York City a couple days ago.
Indeed.
We were talking on text and you were like, I'm so sorry I didn't respond right away, but I've run around more for this show than I ever have in your whole career.
Yes.
Why was that?
Okay, so...
because you've done shows around the world.
Yeah.
Why was this one different?
This one is different because we were like 100% more hands-on and like, you know, like boardroom, like great people, but we had to kind of like push things with them to make sure everything was right. Even like last night at the show, there was a couple like things, like a couple problems behind the scenes that no one really saw. Everyone saw like a great time, but in like behind the scenes, there was a lot of shit from the guest list to like just like artists getting paid, you know, all of that stuff. But everything kind of worked out, but the running around, like I got there at like 6 for sound check, thinking I could, you know, go out, hang out, maybe even watch a movie, then come back.
No.
I was there.
No.
6 till 3, basically.
So oh my God.
It was a lot.
And Dipset actually showed up.
actually showed up. Yeah, because then like we got this text saying, yeah, Dipset are gonna pull up in buses. And, like, there's these pictures of, like, I think like Jim Jones came from like a proper bus.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking like, are they really gonna pull up though? Like, you know, like Dipset, like I love Dipset. But yeah, are they really gonna come?
Not the and most then, reliable.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I remember there was this Cameron show. It was like, I think it was like 5 years ago. He came to London. He was at the hotel. He was doing interviews and everything, doing press, and he just never pulled up to the show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, Skepta, like, opened for the show. He did great, and then just Cameron never pulled up.
So Skepta was the headliner then, yeah.
Pretty much. It was a Skepta show.
Yeah, yeah. Years ago, when we were doing sketches every week, we were at SOBs, and Joey IE was working at Asylum at the time, and he walked up to us, and he was like, I love your guys' stuff. Would you ever want to have Cameron on the show? And we were like, yes, it's been a dream of ours to get him on the show and do that. And he was like, cool. And we tried to arrange a time, and then we found one that worked. He was like, if you don't show up in the next 20 minutes, Cam's going to get on a flight and you'll never see him again.
Wow.
And we ran down there, shot the sketch. Like, he was amazing. And it ended up being a legendary, like, achievement for us.
Yeah,
and our most popular video. And a dope thing for him. And if we didn't, like, hustle down there in those 20 minutes and take him seriously, it would have never happened.
Yeah, I remember even seeing this. I remember, like, Supreme opened their first store in Paris, and they booked Cameron to perform. And then he performed, but his mic cut out. And then it was like, I mean, it was like 5 minutes of silence. Then he was just like, over it. They just left. And then, like, all you see in his Instagram is like him and, like, I think he was with Juju at the time, like by the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, yeah.
Just like doing what Cameron does. Yeah. The Tower. Everyone was like, oh, what the fuck?
Not performing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the worst.
So when you approached that, did you have that in the back of your head?
That he might not. You know, because of those two experiences that I've seen, I was a little bit, I was thinking, damn, is he really going to show up? Because, you know, Jim Jones posted it, like, on his Instagram. So I was like, okay, Jim Jones, he's probably going to do it.
Yeah.
Know? But then Cameron didn't even post it. I don't think, maybe he did. I didn't check his Instagram. But I was kind of like, okay, you know, like, if he doesn't, then, you know, everyone's going to be like, Pizzle is a whack. They sold us a fake party. Cameron and Jim Jones didn't even perform. And then it was the last time I do a party in New York. And, you know, I've been... Pizzle Face is over in New York, so.
No, they touched that stage, and they torched that stage, and it was a great night.
Yeah.
It was a great night.
Yeah. Jay Critch did not show up, but then you did get somebody.
Flipped an Arrow.
Yeah. Flipped an Arrow. We brought Amine.
That was dope, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out to Booba Savage.
I thought last night's show was perfect the entire time that we were there, except for one thing.
Uh-oh.
What's that?
And this is your fault.
Oh, my God.
You were on the decks.
Yes.
You were spinning, and you played A$AP Rocky and Skepta. And your fellow countryman couldn't get his entire verse.
Cut it off?
Mixed it out. Blended it. How dare you?
No, you don't have to talk about it. It's
that's
okay.
Fine. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No,
yeah.
We'll just sit here and
in
shame
silence.
You.
That's exactly right.
I owe my country a great dissatisfaction. I owe the queen an apology.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck Theresa May.
Look at this proper British accent you're doing to try and win everybody back.
Can you apologize to some other people from your country, like Adele?
Sorry, Adele.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Can you apologize to James Corden?
I don't like James Corden.
Yes.
Wow.
Neither do I.
I don't like. Because, you know, have you ever seen James Corden when he used to be like a comedian on like a TV show?
I try not
when
to.
When he used to be a comedian on a TV show?
Well, not like a live TV
so
show.
So rude.
Like, what was that show? Gavin and Stacey? I think so. Hey, he was on the show. Let me quickly Google it.
Yeah.
It's a show called Gavin and Stacey. And he was on that show. And that's when he was cool. But now he's just like Piers Morgan. They're all doing that whole.
Piers Morgan should apologize to us, by the way.
Well, yeah.
You know?
He should apologize to Cisse for being racist.
There he is. Gavin and Stacey.
Gavin
yeah.
And Stacey.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at that tracksuit.
I know, right?
Barely hanging on.
By a thread. A loose thread.
Overall, you had a good night?
Great night.
Have you slept?
Yeah. What'd you do after?
Because we're right now recording, like, I don't know, 6 hours after the night ended.
I roamed the streets, basically. Like, I was literally just, like, roaming around, like, the Lower East Side, and I walked, like, through Manhattan. I think I even walked to Times Square.
Well, it's a beautiful day out.
Yeah.
So, are you okay?
I know,
yeah. Do we have to, like, worry about you?
No, I'm great.
Is this one of those things where it's, like, I have no place to stay?
Right,
like,
right, you know,
I'm, like, just walk around till, like, it's time for me to imaginary check-in.
That's right. Yeah.
And feel like I have somewhere to go, but no.
Listen, it saves you on hotel fees,
yeah,
right?
I know, right? Just like hop on the train, just like sit on the train to like each stop back and forth. I feel like you can make a couple time off of that.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from London.
What part?
Southeast London.
Okay.
So this isn't like a bit that you're from New Jersey and you're just like doing a put on for
Mark Ronson.
Yeah.
No, I'm a Londoner born and raised, West African.
Yeah.
born in London.
Do you love Southeast London?
I love it. It's the best part of London.
Why?
Just because, like all, like, the dope rappers came from Southeast London, or South London, and just, like, the cultures in South London. Like, East London's cool. North London is, like, where you have the Skeptics and stuff. But, mm-hmm. like, South London, I feel, is, like, where the culture really is in London.
What rappers came up around your time? Like, who did you know about, like, maybe before they popped off that you were like, wow, they're really talented and I see something in them?
Rappers before my time. Wait, what age are we talking about?
Like, just growing up.
Just growing up. Because you know what? I lived in London until I was 7. Mm-hmm. Then I moved to Gambia, which is in West Africa, until mm-hmm. I was 13. Then I came back. So when I was young, I literally grew up on reggae music and Master P. It's weird. My dad, like, has all, like, the Master P Body CDs. Like, I even have, like, the CD when Snoop Dogg was signed.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one, by the way.
Yeah, like, have all those albums. So, like,
Paid the Cost to Be the Boss.
Exactly. Yeah. That. I had all of those albums. Like, I was listening to, like, 8Ball and MJG, like, British music I never really listened to until I went back to London when I was 13. And that's when, like, Dizzy Rascal had that, He's Just a Rascal song and all that stuff. So I grew up listening more to American music and reggae than actually British music.
Did your friends get it? Did your friends, like, get into Southern rap as
like
well?
Yeah, like Memphis rap and... Or were you just, like, the one who had this thing?
Yeah, I was
that
one weirdo, because when I came to London, like, everyone was like, yeah, Dizzy Rascal, yeah, Wiley. And I'm there like, Master P, 8Ball, MJG, Mace.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this guy's weird. You know, coming straight from Africa back into London, like, I was wearing, like, Jordans and stuff. And because, you know, like, in Africa, they love, like, American culture and stuff. So, like, Jordans and all this. I used to have, like, Sean Carters when, like, you know, Jay-Z did those. Like,
the Reebok shoes. Yeah.
I had, like, G-Unit sneakers where, like, you'd spin the logo on the
Hell
shoes.
Hell yeah.
Like, well, they probably were fake, but.
That's all right.
They're still sick shoes. So I had all of that stuff. So I came back to London thinking I was flying fresh. People were like, what the fuck are you wearing? Like, they used to call my Jordans moon shoes. That's how bad it was. And now everyone loves Jordans. But back in the day, they weren't like the Jordans that people wear for going out. They're like the proper basketball Jordans, like the ones that people play on the court. So
yeah.
People be like, damn, those are ugly shoes. But I forget, no, these are Michael Jordans, but not the ones that we want. Like,
cool. But, why did you move down to Gambia?
Just because, like, my family, like, would travel a lot. And, like, it was a thing of my mom was like, oh, I'm going to Gambia for like a couple of weeks. And I was like, oh, can I come? Thinking I'd be there for like 2-3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Ended up being 6 years. But yeah, it was just one of those things where it's like, I'm there. And then I was like, okay, I'll stay for a year. Cool. And then I'm thinking, oh, when is the time to go back? They're like, no, you're having so much fun. Like, just stay for a little bit longer. I'm like, all right, cool. Then all my friends are thinking, like, in Gambia, they're like, oh, when you're going back home, I'm going back soon. You know, I'm never going to unpack my suitcase because, you know, I'll be gone. And then after like 4 years, like, you're not leaving, bro.
Oh,
you're
man.
Leaving. I'm like, oh, cool. You know, I went to school there, had a proper education. And then on the 6th year, when I'm finally settling, probably finding a wife and ready to settle down and have a kid, they're like, okay, you're moving back to London now. I was like, okay, yes.
So you finally, like, situate yourself and you feel like you're at home.
Yeah.
And then does your world get turned upside down and moving back to London?
Oh yeah, it was just like, not to say it was like a culture shock, but just like going back to London. And then, you know, like I said, like, I all like the new wave of music and all that came out, so I had to like catch up with everyone. Like, I was like, you know, this is when, like, everyone had Nokia like 3310s and stuff, so like I'm like on like AZ lyrics, like learning the lyrics to the words so I could go in school, because like everyone used to rap in school too.
Yeah.
So then I used to like come and try like freestyle as well, like, but because I had like this weird, like, my accent's super weird because it's not a British accent, but it's not like an American accent, but it's not an African accent either. It's just like all these accents mashed up into each other. So I was always that weird guy with like the funny accent in school too. So it's just like, I'm trying to like do the British thing, but I'm like, you know, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. And
yeah.
Let everyone just do their thing.
What kinds of American culture were touching Gambia when you were growing up there?
All right, cool. So the Nelly and Kelly song.
Yes.
I
swear
to God, that song. In Gambia, this is said that was like the national anthem. Like, that song would get played every day, like on radio. I don't know why that song was so popular in Gambia, but they literally said this song is the national anthem for Gambia. And then when I think about that song, I remember when like she had her phone and I think she was like texting, but it was like, well, Microsoft
Excel. Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that was like the funniest thing. But like, that song was like a big thing. Like 50 Cent, like, he was obviously like one of the big biggest like artists, even in Africa. Like 50 Cent is like the guy, because like he's the true like gangster image, you know. Like he had like the vest on, and mm-hmm. he had the chain, the bulletproof vest, even the album cover. So like Get Rich or Die Trying was like
huge,
one of the main albums that I listened to. And well, it's like P. Diddy, obviously, like Mace as well, like obviously like Biggie and Tupac. Like everybody would have like their like theories, like, yeah, no, Biggie's better, Tupac's better, did he really kill XIV?
Yeah, it's
like a funny thing. But yeah, like that. So like in music, that was like the biggest like I guess trends, those type of acts. And
any TV or movies?
TV, movies, like that Nick Cannon movie when he was like a drum.
Drumline?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was like, that was a good movie that we watched. Anything like Kill Bill was like one of my favorite movies. I remember watching that on bootleg.
Mm-hmm.
That was fire.
So there wasn't like much of a divide in terms of like culture. Like, yeah,
it was literally like, it's, everything's pretty much similar. Because even like cars, like people drive like Cadillac Escalades. And I mean, I've never seen a Cadillac Escalade in London because the roads are too small.
But yeah.
Like in like Africa, like if you're like rich, like a lot of people like were super wealthy, so their kids would actually be like, oh, look at that car in this movie, and then their parents should just buy it because they just have the money to afford it. You know, my parents can afford it, but you know, I just hop in there because I had a guy had a gold Cadillac. I've never seen that, like a gold painted Cadillac. I was like, oh, that's crazy. And that's life. Life was fun in Gambia.
Yeah. Well, what'd your parents do?
My dad owned like a trucking business that we like import and export stuff. And my mom, she used to work for the UN at the time. Well, she still does, but not as much as she does now. But
doing what?
She was like a human rights lawyer.
Wow.
So she like goes to like different countries around the world and just help women get like better rights. So she was like in like Afghanistan, Liberia, Uganda, Sudan.
Oh my God.
Sierra Leone, like a lot of like countries. So
yeah.
And what a noble profession.
Yeah. Is there any, I mean, obviously it's not like a vacation, but like, did you go on any of those trips?
Yeah, so I went to a lot of the countries she went to, if not maybe at least like 80%. I think the only place I didn't go to was Afghanistan, but she had the time of her life. She said she went like skiing over there because it's like close to the mountains. So it's like a part where like you can proper like ski and stuff. And then she rode like camels and stuff. But I went to Liberia. I went to Sierra Leone. I went to Uganda. I went to Kosovo. Yeah, that was like when I was super young. That was like, it was so weird. It was in Kosovo. They had never really seen black people before, only on TV. So like, had everyone taking pictures of me.
Like, wow, so you were weird. Like the gold Escalade.
Yeah. yeah.
Literally, like the savior. Basically, it looks at me like, wow, a black man in Kosovo. They exist. You know, it was like hilarious. But
what did you see? What did you take back with you after you went to all of these areas around the world where there were human rights violations or war or just atrocities?
I mean, like going back and then like seeing like all these places. Obviously, I was like super young, but it just made me like appreciate humans more. I feel like even moving to Gambia, I feel like there's like, like with Africans and even like not even Africans, with like people that are raised with parents that are like first like generation parents, they have a little bit more of like a respect for like their cultures and their parents. Like, you know, I moved back to London, I'm seeing like these kids talk back to their mom, like the mom's like, come here, like, fuck you, mom. Or like the mom saying to me, yeah, go to the shop. And like, no, mom, you fucking do it. I'm thinking, damn, if I ever said that, I'm gonna beat the shit out of me. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck? And then just seeing that just made me realize that like there's so much respect gained because you're like amongst people that might not necessarily have as much as you do, but they still cherish what they have and they make use of what they have. And if they can do that with so little, then people with like so much who just like kind of waste their way, it's not really like a good thing. So for me, it's just like I just learned to, you know, appreciate more and just like not take life for granted and just kind of do as much as I can while I can.
So your passport was just like filled at a young age.
Up. Yeah, you know, we had all the stamps. And yeah, like now it's cool that, you know, like I grew up traveling and then I still like continue to travel. And that's like one of the best things I would say that about my life is that I just get to travel.
Are you an aisle or a window guy?
I'm an aisle just because like I need more like leg room mm-hmm. on like the outside. But however, when I'm like pushing my leg out, I always get hit.
Yeah, by the cart.
Yeah, so like I'm like trying to sleep and get hit, and I don't even say sorry. It's like just hit you, and I keep going, and I'm looking at a woman like, "Come on," and she's like, Wow. So I hate that. Like, window's cool if you want to see like the nice landscape. When you go pee, you have to kind of like, you
climb
know,
over yeah. everyone.
Yeah,
not
like,
for that.
Nah, you have to be like, oh, excuse me. Oh, and then that one person in the aisle has to wait for you because they don't want to sit down and then get back up. So they're waiting for you, and then you know you just kind of go through and yeah.
Yeah, and God forbid you go to the wrong side, like get in their way again. Just not for me. No. Do you have any brothers or sisters?
I have a little sister, yeah.
And did she travel as well?
She did, but
you didn't leave her in London?
No, she was in boarding school most of the time.
So really?
She went to like boarding school in like South Africa and stuff like that. But she's moved back to London now.
So you guys didn't exactly like grow up together like all the time?
Yeah, not all the time. No, just because like my mom, she was always traveling. And my dad too, because he was like back and forth in London. And when I was like, when I moved back to London at like 13, 14, they were kind of like, well, you know, you're a good kid. So they kind of just left me in the house by myself. And then I'd like cook food for myself and, you know, like set myself to go to school. So like I properly lived by myself when it's like 15. That's when I was like just completely by myself.
Holy cow.
But my sister, she's 6 years younger than me. So she should be like 9 or something. So she had to go to like other like boarding schools and all that. And then when she got to an age, she moved back to London and now we live together.
So when you move back to London, are you meeting up with the same kids that you knew when you were 7 years old?
No.
So totally new friend base.
Yeah, a lot of those kids became racist. It's weird.
Really?
Yeah, it was just
became
like,
racist or were racist?
Became racist because like when we were growing up, like we all go to the same school and we were cool. But then I feel like life just kind of like changed them to a point. I had this one friend. He was like this guy called Charlie. So this ginger guy. He was like my best friend when I was young. And then when I moved back to London, he looked like one of those people you see in like Green Street. They were like, yeah, come on, fucking have it. And I was like, yeah, I'm not trying to like hit you up anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think like it's just like people like experience different shit in life. And like I feel like when you grow up as well, like your parents and stuff, like if they don't really teach you certain things, then I feel like you just kind of drift into a certain crowd. And obviously there's peer pressure and, you know, so.
When was the first time you traveled on your own?
Traveled on my own. Probably the New York trip when I started Pissface in like 2013. There's like random guy on Facebook that hit me up. And I was like, yo, I'm your dad's cousin. If you ever want to come to New York, come stay with me. And I booked my ticket like the next week. Like, okay, cool. Pulled up. I was supposed to stay for over 2 weeks. I ended up staying for 3 months.
Well, wait, you are bad with like, you know, how long am I going to be staying here?
Yeah.
Turns into 6 years.
Yeah. So,
wait, okay. Randomly hit you up on Facebook.
Yeah.
Says he's related to you.
Yeah. How do you know that he actually?
I confirmed. I'm not going to like, you know, we had the same last name.
Oh, all right.
You know,
like,
that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, no, obviously.
We have the same last name.
I was like, so my dad, is he legit? He's like, yeah, that's your dad. Yeah, that's your cousin. Cause, you know, my dad, like, his dad was like a super huge polygamist. So I probably have like 30 to 50 uncles and cousins and aunts spread around the world. So whenever someone hits me up, and then I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah, free place to stay wherever you go. Yeah,
yeah. Like free.
You just have to go with them, believe it that they're related.
So it was cool. Like I stayed there and. That's when like everything was kind of happening in New York. I feel like that was like the new birth of like culture and just like the new wave of everything. Like that's when the internet like really like expanded, like from Twitter to Instagram. That's when everything was just kind of like, you know, it's like the big bang, like when Thanos snapped his fingers. That's when everything just kind of changed from like, you know, like
or disappeared.
Exactly, yeah. Or disappeared. So like, you know, like the ASAPs, they were like properly like coming into formula, like Ferg just dropped Shabba.
Mm.
And I remember when like the whole mob did that Funk Flex freestyle.
Yeah.
I remember when Travis Scott had his first show with SOBs, and then he had a boiler room with Ferg and Travis at Mike Dean's apartment.
Yes, we were there.
Yeah.
I was there too.
Where Travis was yelling at people for not turning up enough like hanging off a chandelier. Yeah. And I was, you know, my Jewish nervousness was just like, please don't hang on the chandelier.
Yeah.
And I remember he's not like yours. Pointing to people to like hold him off your crowd stuff.
Yeah.
And he pointed to me and I looked at him like, I'm not gonna be that guy on a boy room camera sweating holding up right. Guys in jeans like I was not gonna be that guy.
That was good foresight on your part, you know.
By the way, Mike Dean's neighbors hated him.
Oh, I'm sure.
Had to have.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now they live in California where they don't have to deal with their neighbors. But back then when you moved from Gambia to London, and you're a teenager, who are you?
I was like still into like I was a big like video gamer. Like Metal Gear Solid is still like my favorite game. And like, you know, Call of Duty. I was like the typical like just kid that loved video games. And
wait,
movies.
Call of Duty? You had like the headset?
Oh yeah.
Maybe you were racist.
Yeah, one of those guys. You know, everyone was just like, oh no, playing. I'm just there like, yeah, I don't want to say that word, but yeah. I was like super into like video games. I still am, but not as much as I like Mortal Kombat. I just like play that religiously.
Who's your character?
Scorpion, Liu Kang, or Raiden. Those are my top three. How about you?
Oh, I don't have any.
Were you heavy online?
Yeah.
So were you messing with like, what was around at that? MySpace or?
Oh yeah, I had a MySpace. I had like a Bebo as well. Like the MySpace, MySpace, I had like, what did I have on my MySpace? I don't know, I had like a lot of Soulja Boy on my MySpace.
Was he in your top eight?
Yeah, I think so. Soulja Boy.
Were you in his top eight?
No, all right. Did you contact anyone through MySpace like and like get a response?
No, I don't know. I wasn't that cool at that time. No, I was just a random nobody.
And what about Tumblr? Did you get into Tumblr?
Yeah, yeah. I had a Tumblr, and then I think I had this picture of when like Tyler Creator first came to London, and then they had like a pop-up and I went to a store and then like he signed my hat. And yeah,
someone took a picture of that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's dope.
And that's the only Tumblr picture I had.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I never used Tumblr after that until I started Pleasant Faces.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. So when you went, when you came to New York, how were you getting into events?
I used to lie. I used to like tell people I worked for Vice. That was like the easiest thing to say. Like Vice was like super popping those days. It's still popping now, but like saying you worked for Vice then, like you can get into anywhere.
Yeah.
I used to literally like, because obviously like I said, I have a fucked up accent. So I used to like tune my accent to the best British accent I could think of. Like I was just thinking of like Snatch and all those movies.
Yeah.
Like, just tuning it, fine tuning. I'd be like, yeah, hello, mate. Yeah, I've just been flown here from London. I am, yeah, I'm just working for Alex. Vice has sent me here. And then all the people are hearing is Vice and London.
Yeah.
And they're thinking, wow, our event is that big. And they've sent someone from Vice all the way here. No, we're doing something right. And I'm just there like, yeah. Like I'm in there like taking all these photos. So, like I literally got into like 95% of venues. And these were like big shows too, because I remember there was like weird show where it was like, I think it was like a Budweiser thing, but like Ice Cube was a part of it. And like, I think Big Sean as well. And I just like finessed and going to that event. You know, there was like a bunch. Let me think, what else was there? I think there was like a 2 Chainz like release party for like his first album or second album. I can't remember. Everyone went to the Box and then Cameron was at the Box.
Yeah.
I remember that show. That was a wild show.
So are you going in there like with your camera, quote unquote, as a photographer?
Yeah. As a videographer, I started taking videos. Souls was always the photographer. I never thought I could take pictures, so I just did videos, and then my laptop wouldn't let me edit videos, it broke, so damn. What I could do was take pictures, so I took some pictures, and then I'd send them to Souls, so because of the time difference, I'd go to an event, it ends at 3, I'd send it to Souls, because like the 6-hour time difference would be 9 a.m. in London, then by the time I sleep and wake up, he sent me back the like edited photos. This is when we used to edit photos, when I had a digital camera, before I probably started getting into film. So he edited the photos, sent it back to me. They were like the worst like edits, by the way. They were the worst edits.
You guys didn't have the same vision.
Yeah, we didn't have the same vision. We were just like filtering, like, you know, when, you know how Instagram had the like sepia filter. Oh, like, we were on that wave, basically.
Let me look like it's 1850.
There's this one like picture of Ferg that I took, and it literally looked like it was like a barbecued photo. Like
did you put on the, you stacked filters, so it'd be like Cupertino
it was all these like random effects. But
do you have the raw files now?
Yeah, we still have the
raw files.
I lost I lost my laptop like 2 years ago, and I lost a lot of photos. But
did Kanye's cousin steal it?
Find that guy. Yeah, I lost a lot of photos, even like these like set of photos I took of Drake. I remember like I did like a random shoot of Drake, and like I posted one, but I had like these 7 photos that I didn't back up in time, and then my laptop got stolen, and that's the last time ever.
I heard that you had a thing with DMX.
Oh yeah. I don't know where you heard that story.
Streets are talking.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Streets are talking.
Yeah. Jeff heard it in Yonkers. Yeah.
So basically there was this I know. I remember something to do with Eminem. I think it was releasing something, or he did a show and it was like an after party at this club. I can't remember what club it was, but So like I'm chilling, I'm about to like go inside and DMX pulls up. And this is like he's fresh out of jail. So like he's like proper like aggro and everything. And then like this girl, she's like, yo, X, can I take a photo of him? I'm a big fan. He's like, all right, cool. And then like she stands next to him and then she like she's taking someone's like taking a photo of her. Then after she's like, oh, can I get a selfie? He was like, what the fuck's that? And then she like points the phone and then he's like, all right, cool. Then she tries to do a kissy face and he was like, what the fuck? He's like, I don't want to do this photo no more. All right, get the fuck away. And she goes in and then like I'm in the club. And then he's like walking through and then he's like walking past and he looks straight at me like what the fuck are you doing? I'm just kind of like, and I end up taking a picture and I just left that event. Like Eminem didn't even pull up. I only went there for Eminem, but he didn't even show. I was pissed.
Damn. He's on that Cameron shit. Yeah.
So you're just going around to all these events, talking your way in and taking pictures and enjoying the vibe. Do you get to know people in New York City? Are you then a known entity as a photographer?
Yeah, so I think for me, at that time, my advantage was that I was from London because I would approach people and I'll be like, yeah, I'm from London. And then
people think you're important.
Yeah, exactly. Being from London, the Britain, the queen, the sovereign.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
We're kings and queens. We have a little bit of, royalty there. Shout out to Meghan Markle. There's some top dogs out there. So then they'd like see me and then, being there for 3 months and then I'm like at nearly every event. Then I'm kind of like, oh, this guy from London. Then they'd come to London. I'm like, oh, what are you doing here? I'm from London. Oh, shit. You're that flower from New York that's in London, but from London. I'm like, well, yeah. And then they're like, oh, okay, cool. So what are you doing here? Oh, I'm from London. And then they'll see me in like Japan or something. And I'm like, what are you doing here? Oh, well, I have my own thing going on, but you have your thing. So then it became like a familiarity thing where they just keep seeing me. And then it's kind of like hard not to miss me. I'm like a 6'4" guy.
Yeah.
So then it was just like, okay, from being like, oh, you're that guy from London to being, oh, cool. You're the photographer that takes dope photos. Oh, yo, this is Cisa. He takes cool photos from London. Then it just became like, oh, we're all friends, because it's been 6 years now, so a lot of these artists, like I said, we all kind of came up at like a similar time. Like I said, like Travis Scott, his first ever show in New York at that time. The ASAP Mob guys were just running to see Big Sean, all these guys. So it was just like, me seeing them a lot and then taking pictures. And then as they grew bigger, I was documenting like their like rise to where they are now. And then it's been like a nice journey.
At a certain point, you start to attain an audience off of this thing.
Yeah.
And what were the plans in going into that, and how did that actually begin?
Well, we made the Tumblr, but we didn't even make it for, like, we just made it because we took pictures and we just wanted to put them somewhere. It wasn't necessarily, like, at that time, we didn't look at places faces like becoming, like, a big thing. We literally said, okay, we're going to, whatever 9-to-5s we had, we'll just do those, and then we'll go to concerts and take pictures and put them on the site. It was just, like, a hobby thing rather than looking at it like, okay, we're going to build like this big full platform. But then as I said, we took more photos and we even met Kanye, and then when we took the Kanye photos in Paris, that's what kind of like blew us up a bit more. And then
called you over.
Yeah, like we were, so I was in this club, this is just after he dropped Yeezus, and it was like a Bin Chill party, like when they were doing the whole Bin Chill thing.
Mm-hmm. So
it was like,
and there were 70 DJs on 3 computers. Yeah. And nobody knew how to work any of them. Yeah,
yeah. So I remember
Bin Chill well.
Yeah. I remember seeing like Virgil play off of an iPhone once. Like,
it's so next level.
Wow. Yeah, whoa. Yeah, he really deconstructed DJing so that all of us can now understand it.
Yeah, he's the master, quotes.
That's right, yeah. It's a, quote, concert, unquote. Yeah, yeah.
Then, yeah, I remember even like the whole like Bin Chill, like the sound bite thing. I used to think that was like the coolest shit in the world. Like just hearing that, me and friends used to go crazy when just hearing that. So yeah, we were like in Paris, and it was Fashion Week, but I didn't even know. I just went to Paris. It was like one of my first times going, and then I just went there, and then everyone's like, "Oh, there's this party going on." I was like, "All right, cool, I'll come through." Going to this party, and then yeah, Kanye was there, but he wasn't like even sitting like high like, on like a pedestal or anything. It was just sitting like on the main like ground floor, like right where the people can like basically throw a bottle at his head if they wanted to. Just saying.
If they wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Someone like, oh, Kanye, just sweet dickhead. Yeah. And just like dash a bottle at his head. So.
You'd be a terrible security guard. Yeah. Have at it.
Yeah, go throw
Kanye's
up on him.
Right there.
Yeah.
Come on, take the shot. So we're in the club, and then like, I'm trying to remember, he was like sitting, but then he'd keep, I think when he goes to the toilet, people like follow him just to like get pictures of him while he's like coming back out. So he'd keep doing that, people keep following him. Then there's one time where he went through this back way, and then people all thought he was gonna come out the main toilet door, but he came through back this back entrance. So then he was back at his seat, but everybody was like where the toilet was, like waiting to get these photos. And then like I was the only other guy on like the dance floor, because I was like, okay, Kanye's here. But I wasn't like, oh my god, Kanye's here after the ball. I was like, Kanye's here, that's cool. Then I see him, and we're both like looking at each other. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to say hi. So, like, I reach out. Then his security is like, no, 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 you can't touch Ye. And then Kanye's like, no, 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 cool. So he let me come by his table. And then we're chilling. And then, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, congratulations on Yeezus. It's a good album. You know, you have a daughter now. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Sick. And then I'm just there. Like, then, you know, music. And everyone's, like, looking at us, thinking, like, I was going to do something. I'm just there, like, oh, okay, all right. Well, this is cool. And I was just like, all right, cool. It's nice to meet you. Then before I left, I was like, all right, you know, can I just have one photo of you? He's like, all right, cool, sure. Then like taking pictures, he's like smiling. Then when I like asked him for like the proper photo, he like does his thing. You know, when he was like mean Kanye,
yeah,
his, like,
yeah,
face was just like all the time.
When he was just like, smiles don't translate through history or whatever. Yeah.
So he was doing that exact face. And I took the picture, said bye, left, went, got the role developed the next day, put it out. And then the photo just kind of blew up that same week.
Did you ever have anybody who did not want their photo taken?
I remember taking a photo of Party Next Door, like wanting to take a photo of Party Next Door, and then he like put his head down so not to get his face. So I'm like, oh.
He's so mysterious.
Yeah, like, well, okay, Party Next Door. Yeah. I'll go to the next party then.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay.
Let me think. Party Next Door. Yeah, well, Bryson Tiller, I think it was like some BBC radio thing, like DJ Semtex, he invited me.
Shout out to Semtex.
Like he invited me to the BBC to like take pictures of like Bryson Tiller. But then when Bryson got there, he wasn't really trying to take any photos. Mm. I was like, all right, that's cool.
Again, so, very mysterious.
Yeah.
Very
mysterious. So during this time, how did you explain it to your parents, and what did they think? Were you like, so I have a Tumblr, and I put pictures on there, and I travel the world to do that? And they're just like, what?
Yeah, like, you know, my parents, they've always been supportive. They didn't quite, unless they didn't get in the beginning, it was more of a thing of, okay, that's cool that you're doing this, but how are you like sustaining yourself? Like, you're spending this money on these flights to go take these pictures, but you're not getting money from it. So how are you, you know, self-sustaining yourself? And then,
did they understand clout tokens?
No, no, too old for that.
Yeah. Do they understand likes?
Yeah, I was like, look at these likes, mom. Yeah, you know, yeah. Each like, yeah, you know, it's like 0.1 percent of the national currency. You know, we're gonna flip into bitcoins. And then,
where's the E in Tumblr? Like, yeah.
So they were like, because, you know, like my family, they've always like, they never like, you know, like there's some people whose like family like pressure them into like being like, you know, the obvious like doctors or lawyers. But my family, they were never like that. Like I was always doing media. Like I was actually like doing acting at one point too. Like, I was gonna be in Skins. Like I was like
really?
Yeah. Like I did like they had like this like open casting thing for like the next season. Like season 1 to 3 were like the best seasons of Skins, and it started like trailing off. So there's like open casting, and then I made it to like the final round. But then, like, I forgot, like, one line on the script. I think it was, like, the word fuck or something like that. I literally forgot that one. Like, I knew the whole script, like, and I read it, like, the day before. But I just forgot that one line. And then it was like, oh, that's cool, but nah. And then that was my dreams of being an actor. Like,
damn.
So were you nervous going into the casting call?
No, because it was just, like, they'd, like, put us in groups. And it was like all these different like kids, so then all put in groups, and then somebody will kind of like walk around and then just observe like how we interact with each other. Then they'll give us like a scenario, and then I was like funny, so like I'll just like make a joke, so like I overreact, and then they were like, okay, cool, we like you. Then they'll give me like this paper, and they'll tell me to come the next week. Then like, you know, it's like a interview process with like all the tiers. So then I was like the final tier.
Oh man.
And then you cried your final tier.
Were there any parties that you got denied at the door and couldn't get into?
There's definitely has been. I'm trying to remember.
I remember when Jeff and I first moved to the city, we got invited to a birthday party deep on the west side, right? And there's no trains down there. It's something where you have to get off at like, you know, on like Broadway Avenue, and just like walk all the way over. And it was, we were so green, we were so new, and it was like dressed to impress or something like that. So we're just like, well, let's go to the Maximum here and dress in three-piece suits. So we walk in these three-piece suits on a really, really, really cold night.
Also, we were on the subway.
Yeah.
So you can tell we're very important.
That's
in our
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we walk over there. It's like rainy and cold, and we stand outside, and we see the people whose birthday it is, the people that are, quote unquote, our friends.
Yeah.
And we stood outside, did not get in, and we're like, fuck this.
Yeah, we were like, to the doorman, we were just like, we are on the list. And they were like, no, you're not. You are not on the list.
And we said,
you dorks in three-piece
suits. Yeah, let's go home like noobs that we were. So, yeah, it didn't happen for us.
You know, I've definitely been like, I remember being rejected to go into a party for wearing a tie-dye t-shirt. Like the guy was
because you wore a tie-dye?
Yeah, the guy was literally like the guy was literally looked at him and was like, come on, man, wearing a tie-dye t-shirt. And I thought that was the coolest thing at the time. But like, this is when like I didn't know the difference between like a club, like let's say like a one oak and a party, like just like a random party. So I thought I could just like get into any like club, just wearing what I was wearing. And then obviously that's not the case. I was like buy bottles and tables and
right.
like, pretty girls. And,
yeah,
I was coming with like five or six like nerdy guys.
Yeah, yeah. And a camera.
Yeah, and a camera. And so like that's when like I like kind of like stopped going to like clubs because like I realized that's not really what I'm into.
And you're like, instead I'm gonna throw the parties,
exactly,
and I'll be able to get in anytime I want.
Yeah.
What was the first party that you threw?
First party that I remember throwing was maybe my first London party at the Ace Hotel in London, because they have like this basement where they throw parties at. And you know, like Skepta, he performed at a party, his brother Jamie performed, and Ferg was there too. So that was like,
and you had already known Ferg. Did you know Skepta as well and Jamie?
Yeah, like I'd known them for a bit, because like Skepta, when he was like going to Paris, like when It Ain't Safe came out, like I shot the cover photo for that, like him and Bari, like I took that cover photo, and I shot like half of the video as well, like when those,
and then your laptop got stolen and then you couldn't edit anymore.
Yeah, Kanye's cousin was like $250,000 for it. Yeah, so
when you throw a party like that in London, do you get any like guff from the police? Because
Those parties, like those early parties, no, but like when we started throwing like bigger parties, like last year we did like a 1,000 cat party in the summer at this place called Overspace, which is, that party was fine, but it's when we did like Coco in Camden, which is obviously like a big like venue, like it's a historic venue, like that's called the Camden Palace, so it's like a proper historic venue. So when we were doing that party, that's when like we realized how difficult it was with the police, because we always heard about shows getting like pulled. Like I remember, you know, like rappers like Giggs would like have his show pulled hours before the doors even are open.
That's so fucked.
And then, you know, for us, like with certain acts that were on that we booked, and we like sent it off to get cleared, and they got taken off a day before the party. So we were like scrambling around, like changing over the acts and stuff. And I remember, like we asked them, because like Baka played at our party from like, you know, OVO from Toronto, and like he's been in like jail and stuff.
He's not nice.
Yeah, he's, you know, nice. So like he's done stuff, like, you know, I don't necessarily know he's done, but I think he's done stuff which would warrant him not being able to perform at the party. But they were literally like, we don't care about any of those American acts, it's these British guys that we're after. And so people have not really done anything bad, maybe just a couple of lyrics or so. They're like, nope, we don't want these guys, they could be a threat, and then just got them pulled.
So do you have to like give them like a certain period of time heads up to actually like establish that these are the people who are performing, this is the crowd that's coming, or something like that?
Yeah, like you normally give them like maybe like a month to 2 weeks like notice, but then say they don't tell you until the day of or the day before the event that this guy can't play. So they're just like fucking you over, basically. So it's kind of like, I mean, like I was quick to like find other people, and then, you know, most of my parties sell out before we announced the lineup, so that didn't really affect us that much.
But right,
then,
people aren't upset that,
yeah,
you know, random act here didn't show up.
Yeah, because like I feel like with our parties, it's kind of like people know that someone might come out, So they're just there for the thrill. They're just there knowing that someone's going to come out other than, okay, let's wait for the lineup, see who he has, then start booking tickets. Just kind of the vibe is there. And then, you know, we've been doing the parties like a couple years now, so people know what to expect and know what they're going to get out of it.
What was the first time that you actually felt like, oh my God, like we sold this thing out?
I think it maybe would have been that Overspace party last year, just because like I don't really do that many parties. That party was probably my, in London, that's probably my fourth party in like 2 or 3 years. So like doing that and then like 1,000 cap venue, like a big giant warehouse, thinking, damn, that's crazy. And then the next day saying, okay, do you guys want to do Coco, which is like 1,500. And then going from that to that and selling that out as well. And I was like, wow, these are like, because like we've done other parties like Tokyo and all those places, but like when it's like your home turf, you know, like being able to sell out shows like an act, because like Coco is like a concert venue pretty much. It's not really like a party venue. You can throw parties in there, but that's where like I remember seeing Kanye do Coco after he did the Brit Awards, you know, the whole like Brit Awards thing. We had like Skepta and everyone on stage.
Yeah.
And then he like literally announced like the next day doing a free show at Coco. And then, like, everyone scrambling to get there. And then he brought out, like, Vic Mensa, JME, Skepta, Theophis London.
Like, right. So that was, like, right. The all-day time?
Yeah.
I remember when Kanye did Coco in the bathroom at the place that you had been in Paris. He kept going back and forth.
So, like, just being able, you know, that venue is, like, a very, like legendary venue. So being able to, like, sell that venue out as, like, a photography brand,
crazy.
So that was when like everything was kind of like wow. And then from then I've just had the drive to kind of do things like, not to say bigger, and just like make it a moment. That's why like, us being in New York and doing this like party that we did with Boiler Room, like, you know, 1,600 people, it's like our first time probably doing anything out here.
Great energy in, you know, the building,
selling it out, yeah, you know, from the acts, having those acts, and you know, it's all the way in Queens as well. So that was like pretty cool.
Okay. For anybody who's wondering, I've still not had lunch.
This is the update.
I've still not had lunch, not that I have not still had lunch.
Jeff, would you be more apt to have lunch if people bought a mug?
Yes, that's why. I can't have lunch until you buy a mug because I'm...
You're on strike.
I'm on strike, and I'm so hungry. Just please, please buy a mug. Please.
Guys.
I don't want to die.
This isn't a favor. This is life and death.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on, I'm gonna start singing. In the arms of the angel, fly away from here. In the
arms of the angel. Go to itsthereal.com/shop and help out your local hip hop sketch comedian. If you love Jeff, get that mug, get that mean mug today. And now back to Cisse of Places Plus Faces.
What was the first piece you did in terms of your merch?
First piece we did was this hoodie that was reflective and said Places Faces on it. And we literally only made those hoodies more so as our business cards rather than actually trying to sell them. Like, we thought we'd make these hoodies, and then when we were on stage like taking pictures, when the crowd's like taking photos of like the acts and stuff, like when like they flash and then the hoodie reflects, they'll see Places Faces, then go into our Tumblr, then see all the pictures that we take. But then my friend had a Boiler Room in London, and I made like 15 hoodies. That's when I was about to sell. I know, actually, there's this girl that wore it. She was like this model, but she was like super pretty, and everyone was like, wow, that hoodie, because, you know, complimented the girl. So we were like, oh, that hoodie, we need that hoodie. So I made like, I spent like £300. That was like my only £300. Made 15 hoodies, was gonna put them online to sell. My friend's like, oh, we wanna wear this Boiler Room, it'll be crazy, like live streamed, all of that stuff. I was like, all right, cool. Gave it to my friends to wear. We all turned up sweating, going crazy, mosh pits everywhere. Then the party was done. I was like, yeah, guys, I need those hoodies like to sell now. And they were literally looked at me like, come on, bro, we've like bled in these hoodies. We'd be trying to sell them. We're like, damn, that's like my last 200 pounds. But I had to borrow money from my friend and then made another 15 hoodies. And then those sold and just reinvested that back into making more stuff. And then from there, started with hoodies to, like, I guess, in a sense, collection. So it's been pretty good.
Were you also selling those hoodies, like, overseas and stuff?
Yeah, so, like, we were just mostly online. So, like, we had, like, so, yeah, first, like, it was the UK, because that's where we're from. And then when we, like, traveled to more places, the exposure we got, you know, like, I remember when, like, Wiz Khalifa wore one of our hoodies, and I think that was one of the things that, like, propelled, like, the clothing side to even bigger, because, like, him, that's when he was dropping songs like We Them Boys.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Like, that song was, like, super big. And then
he was, how did it get to him?
I had a friend who has a brand called M Plus RC. It's like a French brand. And he had met Wiz prior to that. Like, I think he met him in LA. Like, his friend, no, Wiz, sorry, wore his stuff. So when Wiz came to Paris, he told my friend to, like, just come link him at some radio station thing. And then I was in Paris as well. My friend was like, oh, you should come through. So I came, and then I met Wiz there. And I was just like, oh, yeah, you know, I have this brand called Place of Faces. And then luckily I had, like, a hoodie in my bag. I just gave it to him. Mm. And he was like, yeah, come to my hotel the next day, let's hang out. And that was, like, my birthday as well. So I hung out with
Wiz on my birthday. Spent your birthday with Wiz Khalifa?
Yeah.
In his hotel room?
In his hotel. Well, yeah, we started off at the hotel room. He was wearing, like, I got there and he was already wearing my hoodie too. So then we started taking, like, took some photos of him on the balcony. And he was cool, and then he had, like, a whole press day. So, like, I followed him around, and he was just wearing the hoodie throughout his whole press.
That's so dope.
And then he would, like, tag the hoodie and stuff. And then,
he's the greatest, yeah.
Yeah, such a, like, a cool guy. Like, Wizards was definitely, like, one of the early guys that was, like, early support of the brand, and he helped get the brand to a certain level of success.
Yeah. Well, where are some, like, very unexpected places that you've seen it, like, without any of your involvement?
Before we went to Southeast Asia, it was, like, heavy in Southeast Asia, like Bangkok, Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, like, all those places. And then when we check, like, what countries have bought, like, I know, like, before we had, like, a presence, like, in Africa, and, like, Nigerians would buy a lot, even, like, people from Dubai and stuff like that. This is, like, without us even going there or having any connection to those places. And then now we've been there, so now we've established those, like, connections, so people buy more. But even before, like, we were just at home thinking, oh, we have an order in Finland or an order in Dubai in Kazakhstan. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to Borat.
It was all your mom. Yeah, yeah. It was all your mom just, you know, ordering stuff too. Yeah,
exactly.
Changing her IP address.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to show my son some support.
How do you feel about supply and demand? Do you want to have a very, like, limited collection of pieces, or do you want to, like, anybody who wants one, we're going to keep making them and shipping them wherever? Because, like, there's this thing now, obviously, like, pop-ups over the last couple of years.
Keep everything super limited.
Exactly. Yeah. And it creates, you know, this, like, heat around something. And it's like, well, I got one of those, and now I'm going to line up, and I'm going to make sure that I'm at the Garden, and not even watching Travis, like, on stage. I'm just going to stand online getting merch the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely the limited approach for us has been working, especially with, like, the pop-ups, because, you know, when we do the pop-ups, especially, you know, because of like, my traveling background, like, I just like the opportunity to travel places that I wouldn't necessarily have gone before doing what I'm doing, you know, like, you know, Japan was always somewhere I've always wanted to go. I remember when I was in university and I was watching How to Make It in America, and then I remember, like, in season one at the end, it's like when they had that order from Japan, and then the season two starts with all these pictures of them in Tokyo and all that, and I was like, damn, I really want to go to Tokyo.
You're like, that's success.
Yeah, I was like watching, like, Tokyo Drift and all these movies, like, even like Kill Bill, like, Japan was like my like wow, if I ever go to Japan, like, it's gonna be amazing. And then when I had the opportunity to, like, I just, like, fuck it, I need to go to Japan, and then went there, did the pop-up. And then from that, it's just been, like, going to all these places. So, like, with the pop-ups, we've been to Dubai. We were just in Lagos, like, last week. We've been to...
Did you use the Instagram filter, Lagos?
That filter sucks. I don't understand, like, how do they name, like, the filters? Like, why would a black and white filter be attributed to Tokyo when Tokyo's like a city of, like, colors and lights and stuff. I don't understand how
people are lazy.
Yeah, like, Tokyo.
Yeah.
Lagos. Like, okay. But yeah, Lagos, Tokyo, South Korea, like Seoul.
Well, wait, which city do you think should have a black and white filter? Probably like New York.
New York.
Mm.
Maybe like Russia as well.
Mm-hmm.
Of like the like
Russia's not a city.
Moscow.
Yeah.
They're brutal cities and landscapes. I think in black and white they look cool.
When you approach designing your merch, do you look at it with your photographer's eye, or do you consider yourself more of a clothing designer now, or what?
I never really like want to use the word designer because I just don't. Not to say I don't feel like
it's on your shirt.
Oh, designer. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I thought that's the
yeah.
No, it's designer.
Right. Yeah.
No. When it comes to like design,
are you a clothing director?
It's just like for us, it's we just like make things that we would want to wear, and then you know if people like it, then they can buy it. If not, it's still what we would wear.
Yeah.
So in that essence, I guess it is designing, but like I don't want to. That's why we call it merch rather than a clothing line, because it's not the main focus point of our of what we're doing. No, we start as photographers, so we always want to paint that picture of us being photographers, and the merch is like the clothing is just merch to our lifestyle. Like an artist, like you know, we you don't necessarily call Travis Scott a designer, but he has his merch, so it's just like
they're signed to the same label.
Yeah.
Good. Have you ever been bootlegged?
Oh, hundreds of times. Wow, the bootlegs that I've seen in like especially in South East, I always get like sent these pictures of like just reworded riffs of our logo. So
faces in places.
No, even worse, that would be like places plus EDM. Yeah, or like places spelled like PLAECES or something like that. Yeah.
Yo, I sort of, if anybody can send me any bootleg versions, I'd be very down for this.
Oh, you know, I've actually seen like some good bootlegs where like I'd look at something, I'm like, damn, did I make that? That's pretty fire.
Interesting. So wait, do you bootleg the bootleggers?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you should. Smart. You should. Yeah. By the way, you grew up wearing, you know, S. Dot Curdars or something like that. You know.
Exactly. You know, grew up in this bootleg world.
Yeah. Let's go back a couple of years. When you start making the merch, do you see that as a proper way to really like turn it into a business?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we started like making a bit of money from it. You know, when we like when Places Faces like even started, like even within the first 2 years of Places Faces, even when we had the merch, like Souls was still working at like a supermarket, and I didn't have a job at the time, but I was just always like finding ways of making money legally, and it was just
thanks for the
like,
clarification.
Yeah,
just you know.
Yeah,
and it was just like. You know, then like the merch started doing its thing, and then we got to a point where it was like, okay, cool, you can stop working at the supermarket now because it's becoming like a business where we can sustain ourselves off it and able to afford to keep contributing to this lifestyle. And then, you know, making one hoodie is cool, but then one hoodie is not going to pay all the bills. So then, you know, we're like, okay, let's make a t-shirt with that. Let's make a cap with that. Let's make some socks. Let's make some underwear. And then that's how everything's coming like a collection. And then it builds and then there's more income coming in. So.
Did you understand that you had to put more money in to get more money out?
Yeah, like I learned that as I was doing things, because like I remembered when like we used to like ship all the clothing from my house. And then it got too small. But then my friends were like, you should get an office. I'm thinking, no, I don't need an office. I can just do everything in my house. Like, why am I going to spend money on rent to pay like office and stuff? And then I ended up getting like a small space, but that space got small. Then I had like two spaces, but the space got too small because there was like, we were just putting more into the clothing, you know, like spending more to get more. Like when people would say to me, oh, they'd spend like 50K to like produce collection, I had something like 50,000. Wow, like why are you spending all this money? But like now, you know, it's like 6 years later, I'm starting to understand that you do have to put in money to get more out of it, because you can't put 500 and expect to get like a million from it.
Right.
But, you know, if you put 50,000, then you could make a million from it. So it's just all about having that drive, just knowing how much you want to put in and what you're comfortable with. And I think that's like,
and how did you figure out how to price your items? Did you look to other things around the internet?
Yeah, like I looked at other brands, and then I just looked at it as well. Like, I remember like going into the Bape store in London, and then their t-shirts were like 90 to £100. I'm thinking, damn, I can't afford that. Like, I don't want to spend £100 on like one t-shirt. So then I was looking at, okay, if I make my t-shirts like £50, then a kid can afford to buy two t-shirts. So maybe like one t-shirt and a cap and maybe some spare change for like socks or something. Because like, you know, our stuff, even though we keep it limited, we still want it to be like accessible for everyone, where like anyone can afford it. And just being able to, because, you know, when we do our parties and stuff, we want to see people wear, come to our parties like wearing our stuff. Because when we do things, it's kind of like a culture thing, and it's like a moment. So I kind of want everyone to feel like they're a part of this thing, rather than thinking, damn, I just spent all this money on this one product. Like, I know like things now are like super expensive, like, you know, like the V-loans, that's like t-shirts for like 150-200, but they have the culture for that. That's how he, that's what he wants to do. He wants to be like a hood Raf Simmons, and that's the price point you have to do. But as for us, we just want it to be something of like easily accessible, still limited, but at least someone doesn't have to like sweat that they just spent all this money on one product. So.
Yeah, I saw that the Off-White IKEA collaboration.
The carpet, yeah.
Yeah, and like kids were like lining up for like $1,000
carpet.
What's a collaboration that like came your way that maybe wasn't right for the time, or that, that, you know, you might want to pursue in the future? Like, what are some collaborations that you'd be interested in?
Like, the way Places for Faces for me, it's like a story, it's like a narrative. So everything we do, we always want it to be of Cissé and Souls started from this, and now here they are at this point, and this is what they're doing at this point of their lives. So, you know, like when we, well, what I mean by that is that it's that, cool, Places Faces, we started off doing this, then we did a collab t-shirt with like Anwar Carrots, who's like similar, and he's
shout
a cool
to Anwar
guy.
Yeah,
then now, you know, we've done a collab with like Gentle Monster, which is like a sunglasses company, who I never knew anything about that brand, but my friend was like, yo, this is a cool brand, their stores are cool, they're based in Korea, South Korea, they're like cool people, so I researched it. I was like, oh yeah, go, this could be cool, this could help me elevate my presence in Asia, and then also add to the narrative that Places Faces did a sunglasses collaboration. You know, they just got invested by LVMH for like $70 million or something, like a shit ton of money. So they're doing their thing. And, you know, even with like the Guess Jeans collab, shout out to like Nikolai. Like, I met him 2 years prior to us doing the collab when they did their first collab with ASAP Rocky, and then they did a pop up in Selfridges. And we stayed in touch. Then we always like floated the idea around, but we didn't like go straight and say, okay, let's do a collab. You know, it's like 2 years of us talking to each other, hanging out, seeing each other around, and then me looking at us like, okay, cool, I'm in a comfortable position with my brand where I don't feel like I'm doing anything to jeopardize it, or it might look like it's a money thing, like people will look at it like a genuine relationship between us. So we came together, did this collab, everything was, you know, done, curated by us, in sense of like we picked the models, we picked the locations, it was costed by like people of our age range, so it doesn't feel like everything was just kind of like, you know, marketed to be this, you know, weird thing. It was just kind of like, okay, cool, we get to express ideas and use guests to make better products and use what they have, and they use us in terms of getting into more of like the younger audience, and it's coming together and doing what we're doing. So
can you do a Brexit collaboration called No Places and Faces?
No Places, No Faces.
Yeah.
But then you know, even with like the collabs now, is that like clothing is cool, but I personally feel like we have enough clothes in the world. Like if every clothing company shut down today, we have enough clothes to last us. So I don't really like,
well, then what do you think is next? Like, we do mugs.
Yeah. Well, that's why I want to do more lifestyle products too. So we've made mugs, we've made like, you know, even with like the sunglasses, that's like something that's not necessarily clothing, but it's still an accessory to have. Like, we've done the incense, we've done
you guys do the bags.
Yeah, we've done the bags, and we've even done like furniture as well. We did a collab with like Medicom, who are known for like the bear bricks, but then they also have like this like other line that they make like furniture. So we did like a whole like chair and like set with them. So I want to do like more things like that, where it's like everyday like home products they can use, even like a toothpaste holder, like something that you're not really thinking of, but it's still like cool.
Rocking horses.
Yeah, you know.
But I think to that point too, I think to that point too, we respect the fact that you guys create a moment that no one else can, if they're not there, just get.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's what we always feel when we do our live shows. You have to be there, and if you're there, the experience is something that you will always have. It may not be a tangible piece of clothing,
but it's very special to that.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're creating with the Boiler Room stuff and other events. And I could see that obviously getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah. You know, we like, you know, actually we started off taking pictures. Then from the pictures, we made merch. Then from the merch, we started throwing like, well, I started DJing because I just wanted to listen to the music I listened to. And then, you know, people started booking me as a DJ and I started throwing my own parties. Now we have like our own magazines because, you know, we just wanted something like, you know, people can hold on to like physically that they could look through and just kind of see again our journey. Because with the magazine, people think like, I guess a lot of musicians in it, but we don't necessarily call it a music magazine. For us, it's more of a traveling magazine because when you're looking for the mag, like you see like Gambia, Lagos, Tokyo, Korea, all these places that
New Jersey.
Delaware. Yeah. All these like places that we've been to, and we just want to just like I said, like, you know, I keep saying it, but Piss Face is like a story. Mm-hmm. It's like a film. Like I studied media in school.
You're a storyteller.
Yeah. So yeah. I just want to keep telling the story that this is just this journey of myself and souls who came, you know, I don't cliche, oh, came from nothing, but came from a situation and made a better situation of our lives, and we just continue to grow and keep doing things that we like, that we think is cool, that, you know, sometimes might not work in the first time, but maybe 2 years later we come back to that and then it works then.
How far do you work out, like in terms of like events and stuff? Like, do you like plan things like for 2 years in advance, a year in advance, like a month, a week? Is it day by day?
Hour by hour.
Yeah.
I'm just going to announce another part today.
Oh, yeah. Right on.
Minute by minute. You're just living a quarter mile at a time. Yeah.
Tokyo Drift.
The events, there's things, I started getting into the flow of like planning things ahead, because normally I plan things like a month in advance. So even like when we're like releasing clothing, like I'd give the, like if I was to like send it to like a press site, I'd give them like the day before and think, oh, it's coming out, you know, the next day. Why can't you post it today? Like, we need time. So now, like, I didn't know these things before, but now I know that, like, to get certain things done, you have to like plan it in advance. Like, you know, right now we're working on an event in London that we want to put on next year, but we're doing things this year to help elevate that event for next year. Like, we're like planning ahead. Like, so we're doing those events and then going to these like companies, like sponsors, but listen, we want to do this event next year, so come to these events now so you can kind of get an idea of what we're working towards. And, you know, even with like this Boiler Room thing, we've been like talking to them for about for, like 3 months, and obviously the first one's come about. Then I'm already working on for parties that are going to happen in the summer and September, like all these festivals. So we're having like a nice like run of things, whereas before I used to be like, okay, cool, I want to do a party in 2 weeks.
Yeah, see to your pants
next week. Yeah. It's just kind of growing and like learning how things work, and then just kind of being around people who do things and learning from them, and just, you know, just getting the right flow of things.
What's a moment that you can think of where you were like, man, things are not moving as fast as I want them to go?
Besides this interview.
Not fast as I want it to go. I mean, okay, cool. So we're working on like a G-Shock collab, and with them, we learned from them that it takes like a year for them to even get the stuff made. So we've like, we're signing the contracts, all of that stuff, everything's cool, but now we have to wait a whole year to even, you know, get
roll this, it out.
Yeah, roll it out. So that's kind of like one of the things where it's like, okay, cool. We like, normally when we think of the collab, we want that churned out in like 2 to 3 months, but now we kind of understand there has to be a way. There's like production times, there's all of these things. So, you know, there's been things even when like we've like released clothing where we think it's like a super hot thing. Like when we put it online, everyone's like, this is sick. But then when we finally release it, it doesn't really sell that well. And then we don't look at that as like a mistake. We kind of look at it as like, okay, that's just a lesson. And you know what?
Well, what do you learn from that?
Just like maybe it's not the right time for certain things because that's not how the world has shifted yet, you know what I mean? That's not what people are into. For example, like if we made incense 5 years ago, people might not have bought as much as they're doing now because we didn't establish ourselves as those type of people. If we were made a t-shirt, they made an incense right off the t-shirt, we would be like, oh, what's this? This, what is this? This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you've gone too far left too quickly.
right.
So it's more now people have seen what we're doing and the collabs that we've done and just the things that we're into and our interests. So now people kind of understand that we're not focused on clothing or just one main thing, that we just want to do anything and everything that we can. So then people are more invested into that and then are like, okay, cool, we see what they're doing. This is not too left for them because they've done this before, they've made these things before, so we kind of see what they're doing with this.
You're somebody who travels a lot. Your barber, I imagine, is in London.
Yeah.
What do you do when you have to get your hair cut and you're on the road?
Sometimes I don't even have haircuts. Like, but you know what? A barber that I used to go to, he got deported. So I have to find like a new barber. Like my friend told me, like, I was like, yeah, like I'm trying to get my hair cut. Cause like, oh, you know, the barber got deported, right? And I drove past the store and I noticed it wasn't there. So I was like, damn, he really got deported. So now it's just like.
Well, where did he get deported to?
Back to his home. I think he's from Congo or something.
Maybe you can have to travel there.
Yeah, set up an event in Congo. just do it every like 6 weeks or whatever.
That would be super dope. Yeah.
6 weeks in Congo.
Places and Faces is a known entity around the world now. Do you still consider it to be a South London brand?
Yeah, I still consider it to be a London brand because like that's where the roots are. Even technically we did start in New York, it's still.
So it's a New York brand.
It's a London brand. I mean, do you consider Slick Rick a New York artist?
I consider Madonna to be a London artist, you know?
Yeah.
Or MF Doom.
We could trade people.
Exactly. Trade.
Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, the location draft. It's not as funny.
Right.
But yeah, it's still a London brand because, you know, that's where we're from and that's where we get, you know, the most love from London is where we get the most love from. And it's just like, it's like, even though it's London, I call it like an international brand, just in the sense of that it is everywhere. And, you know, I want people to know that the roots are London, but I still want people to feel like it's like where they're from, there could be like a Place of Faces Japan side of things, or Place of Faces like India side of things, you know, and they're like all building. Like, I have like these like fan accounts where it's just like Place of Faces Indonesia, Place of Faces Kenya, Place of Faces South Africa, and it's just cool to see like all these like communities all like taking the Place of Faces name and still aligning itself with our brand and like reposting our things, but then for their communities of people so they can see, they can show like their cultures, what they're into, but also, you know.
That's very cool.
My favorite thing going on in London right now, there's a YouTube series. Which is the worst.
But like the best?
Yeah, but it's a guy who walks around and he says, like, what are you wearing? And then you have to say, you know, I'm wearing these trousers, a rack.
Just, you know.
I got my Nike trainers.
I got these joggers and they're
150,000 pounds.
Yeah. Like about, you know, like five racks.
So because we watched the Drake episode, which the accents in that are all over the place.
Canadian,
like everybody's
accents?
Funny. It's so crazy, and everybody's wearing like an OVO fitted, a rack.
So Jeff and I are walking down the street, and we're just like, because you know, we're blessed to get like a lot of like gifted stuff, right? So we're just like, my trainers, like. Free.
Yeah.
Warby Parker custom lenses. Free. Yeah. I got my this
designer
hoodie.
By Ron Lewis.
Free.
You know. Free. Yeah.
The Prada, one joggers. Yeah. Free.
Joggers.
Yeah.
I love everything about it. Have you ever seen those guys? Have you ever done that? Have you Do you watch them?
I know who the guy is.
Mm-hmm. My hero.
Yeah.
Because he's like been making like YouTube videos for the longest. Like he's been to like a couple of our pop-ups and like reviewed our pop-ups. But like I guess this thing about the fit thing, that's like a new thing. And I've only seen like the Drake one and some random like one where this girl was wearing the trashest outfit. But I think she had like a 25,000
yes.
pound like earring.
I saw that one too. Yeah.
What?
And I was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I love it.
Like, yeah, I don't know if I could ever like go on like one of those. Like, I just be like, oh, yeah. These pants.
Yeah.
Nice.
A rack.
Yeah.
A rack. Play a torn action. Yeah, it's a stock fan. Yo, this watch on my wrist, dog. It's like 25 G's.
It was sheesh.
Like, yeah. Sheesh. And yeah, everybody in the back is going, And it was like that one guy who was like, yeah, so this Oreo t-shirt. Yo, how much do they even go for these days? Oh, $50.
Yeah. Are there any photographers that you're really paying attention to these days?
Like a lot of the photographers that we like, a lot of, like our friends who are like similar to us, like, you know, Gunnar Stahl.
Shout out to
like,
Gunnar.
Gunnar's like amazing. Our friends from like Dubai, Cheb and Chindi, they're like literally exactly like myself and Souls, but just like the Middle East version of ourselves.
They're the tethered version of you guys.
Yeah, exactly. They're the burnt Middle East, tethered in the sun version of ourselves. Let me think, who else? Cheb and Chindi, who else? Huh? Oh yeah, Ellie from Toronto. He did a lot of stuff with like The Weeknd, and he did like behind the scenes photos of Black Panther as well. So like those photos were dope. You know, Wasim, he's like a Night Lavelle's tour photographer. So like yeah, all of these like photographers who like we just admire photographers that are similar to us, because I'll tell you this story. I met Chimodu. When I first started Place Phase, I met him in 2013. I was with like Bass and his people. Then we went to this restaurant.
That's our dude.
We went to this bar, and this guy was like, "Yo, do you know who that is?" I was like, "No." I was like, "Oh, that's Chimodu." I didn't even know who that was at the time. He's like, "Oh, he took all those legend pieces of like Tupac, Biggie, all these people." I was like, "Oh, they're sick." So I went, like, spoke to him. I was like, "Yeah, I'm a photographer just starting up." Then I was like, "Oh, that's a sick camera. Like, how much was it?" And he was literally like,
"A rack."
More than you can afford.
Whoa.
When
what?
He said that to me, I literally, like, in my head, I was been on, like, a revengeance mission.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can afford these things.
Yeah.
And so then.
Yo, like, you turned into, like, Kill Bill Volume 3. <he's> like.
But
also, you don't even need a nice camera these days, because all you need is that Cupertino filter.
That's right, yeah.
Put the Legos on, put the Tokyo on. Yeah, stack them all.
Stack them all up.
Put some impact font over it.
Yeah, yeah.
All of that. Raise like the contrast. Like, yeah. 100%. Yeah. And but yeah, so ever since then, I just never looked at photographers that were older than me. I just always looked at my peers, because, you know, we're like, those photographers are cool and they've done what they did and I respect their work, but now I want to show my documentation of what I've done, because the pictures that we take now, in 20 years, some kids are gonna be like, wow, those photos of Travis or Kanye or ASAP at this party or this event, those are the pictures of the 2013 to 2025. Or
super dope.
Yeah,
so. Super dope.
We've had a bunch of people from London and from the UK on here. We've had Michael Dapa on, Man's Not Hot. We've had LMA. So, I mean, like, there's, like, a lot of people. Who do you think is somebody who we haven't had that should be on our radar or that has, like, an interesting story besides Souls? God.
I think you should have, like, JME.
Okay.
Like, Skepta's brother, just because he's, like, such a character. Like, this dude is, like, a genius. Like, I remember when I was growing up, and the business ventures he was doing, like even like little things where he had like a Boy Better Know SIM card, and then you just like make like phone calls over and you can buy it. And then I remember when he had these caps that he'd sell for like £160, 0.87 pence. And people were like, well, that's such a high number, very specific. And it's like, yeah, that's how much it costs to fill up my tank in my car. And then he just like, but people would buy that stuff. It was just like a super funny, like cool guy. He doesn't even have like an Instagram, or he doesn't have no social media. All he has is a Twitter that he just blocks people on. He doesn't even follow people. And it's just like, like she says like a name. It's just a cool guy. So like I definitely think like if you had Jeremy on the show, that'd be cool.
Okay, I want you to be 100% with me. As I hope you've been this entire time.
Unless
this has been like all lies and I have no
idea. Exactly.
But okay. Should you ever do an event in Brazil, if there's any opportunity to bring us into that event, like to bake us into like some auxiliary, you know, podcast thing off of it,
whatever it is,
whatever it is,
we'll give haircuts.
I love commenting. Come to Brazil. If I can come to Brazil with you, I would really appreciate it.
Yeah,
you want to come to Brazil?
Yeah.
Do you guys want to host?
Yeah. Oh yeah, hell yeah, yeah.
Every guy's hosting the party.
Yes. Yeah. We've stood on couches before. Yeah.
whatever gets us to Brazil.
I know, yeah.
So I can
Brazil,
just
say, though, it's like,
well, because you know how like the fan accounts of like Katy Perry and Lady Gaga, they all say like come to Brazil. So I've been doing that now for about 6 years.
Okay, yeah.
And I feel like I need to get the full circle moment where I get to actually come to Brazil.
Yeah. So let's all go to Brazil.
Yeah.
Let's make it happen. I actually really want to go to Brazil. I've had those messages too, like come to Brazil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they're all from me.
Yeah.
Damn, well. I mean, I didn't know the Upper East Side was Brazil. Maybe it's Little Brazil or something.
That's right.
Yeah.
What more are you going to do while you're in town?
Hit Times Square, go to Sbarro.
Yeah, exactly. You know, not sleep?
Yeah, not sleep. No, just, I don't know, just hang out. You know, chill. I don't get the proper, like, American experience, you know, go uptown, get lost.
You are uptown, and you are lost. Yeah. Don't you see?
Get lost in like Far Rockaway. Or
not uptown.
That's down there. Exactly. Thinking that's uptown, but then going somewhere completely different. You know, go on the Williamsburg Bridge or something. And
where's the most lost you've been in a city?
Oh, Shanghai. That place is like the worst.
And what'd you do?
Just walk around until someone finds you.
Yeah.
That's literally like, actually, Shanghai, no, Ottawa in Canada. That place, wow.
Was not expecting that.
I know, yeah.
Because this is what happened.
Shanghai, I'm sorry, Ottawa.
Like, Shanghai is like, I didn't get lost in Shanghai. I just felt like I could get lost in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you know, they've like banned like Instagram and all these like social media accounts, so it's not really easy to like hit someone up if you're lost. So it's such a big city too, that's crazy.
What about like Google Maps or like a mapping app?
I don't know if Google Maps is allowed there. Like, you'd have to like find something that does work, but that's if you have service, and you know, like you'd have to buy like a Chinese SIM and all that. So that's a process.
And then you're on the grid.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like they didn't know who you are.
Yeah.
It's like taken, basically.
But Ottawa.
Yeah, Ottawa. This is because, so I was on shrooms.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
I was on
shrooms. That's a good caveat.
Yeah.
And then we were going to back to the hotel. The hotel was literally, we're in a cab, and it was like 3 minutes from where we were. And I literally just hopped out the car. I was like, oh, I just have to walk around. And I was like, what? I just have to walk around. And then I gave like Souls my phone, and then Dad just told him, go back to the hotel, I'll meet you guys there. And I probably like came back after like 3 hours of just me walking around. Like I remember I sat on like this wall in front of like a Nando's for like 30 minutes, just watching people walk past. And then I was literally said to myself, okay, I'm gonna how were people living before like Google Maps and all these things? So I was like, okay, cool, I'm gonna put myself in a situation, how am I gonna get back to the hotel? So then I was like, oh, do you know this hotel? And it was like, yeah, I think it's down that way, take two rights and a left. So I did two rights and a left, and I was like, oh, I'm lost. So I just went back to where I was, and like, do you know this place? Oh no, you have to go left, then right, then two lefts, then another right. Okay, cool, I did that. Then I realized that was the wrong thing, so I just kept walking in circles. Then these like random kids who like, I guess we're a fan of the brand, who knew our word. They're like, oh, Cesar, what you doing? I'm just trying to find my hotel. Oh, we'll take you. So then I'm like, literally following these kids like Peter Pan. trying to find where this hotel is. And then, after 2 hours, everyone's like, where the fuck are you? Blah, blah, blah. You're supposed to DJ in like 10 minutes. I'm like, yeah.
Is there okay, any... Wait. Before we do that, what was your experience in all of this?
Literally.
Also, introduce yourself.
Yep, my name is Souls. I'm the other co-founder of Place with Faces.
You might have heard his name dropped a few times. Yeah,
I'm from East London. Yep, you know what I'm saying. So
is East? Wait, real quick.
Yeah,
East London versus Southeast London. What are we talking about here?
I prefer East London because I'm used to the East London culture.
Damn.
Hipsters are.
Damn.
London is just like Shoreditch.
Yeah. Just cooler,
Yeah. Shouts to Shoreditch. Yeah. Shouts to all our people out there.
We did a show in Shoreditch. So yeah.
So yeah. So like during that whole experience, like we were in the Uber. I was basically with another friend called Chris Skylark. He's a photographer as well. Shout out to Chris. Yeah. So yeah. So that whole, like, he literally just randomly just left the Uber and started walking around and gave me his phone. I was like, oh my God, what is he doing? Like, we were literally, basically the Uber took us to the hotel we were staying. So we were like, okay, where's Cisse? We were like, oh man, let's look for him. We were walking around everywhere looking for him. I was like, yo, there's no way to call him because I got his phone. I was like, oh shit, what am I going to do? So like randomly, we were like, oh shit, let's go back to the hotel and see if he's there. And out of nowhere, he was at the hotel just chilling.
Wait, did you know that he was on mushrooms?
I didn't know he took them, but someone told me he took them. Like, okay, yeah, he took them off. So like,
yeah.
I didn't know at first.
See, here's what I believe. Here's conspiracy theory, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Conspiracy theories.
I think that because you were on shrooms, you imagined this whole thing and you were standing outside the door the whole time thinking it was the toughest club to get into in Ottawa, Canada.
I imagine you weren't in Ottawa the entire time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You were in Shoreditch.
In Gambia. The whole time. In Gambia listening to the Richard Dye track.
Exactly right, yeah.
With my S-Stock haters.
Yo, Cisse, congratulations on an amazing run so far. We're extremely excited to see everything that happens in the near future and the distant future, and really excited to come to Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
So thanks so much for stopping by. I hope you get some sleep while you're in town, and we'll talk to you soon.
Oh, awesome. Thank you for having me. You know, enjoy my time here, and yeah.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of A Waste Time with It's The Real. People want to find out more about us. I'm Eric, curly hair, that's Jeff, glasses, together. We are It's The Real, no apostrophe, no spaces. If people want to find out more about this podcast, which is called A Waste of Time with It's The Real, not A Waste If Time by It's The Real, which I saw was done by our biggest fan.
Fitz The Real?
Not Fitz The Real.
Dan?
Not Dan.
Mom?
Not Mom.
What's his name?
Ed? Not Ed. Whatever, I forgot his name now, so we're even.
Yeah.
A Waste of Time with It's The Real. Jeff, if you want to find out more about what we have going on in our lives, Jeff, where can they go?
You can always go to itsthereal.com, itsthereal.com. We have a podcast.
We do.
A whole real podcast. I know you're thinking, hey, my friend is a podcast too. Guess what?
Your friend doesn't have a podcast.
No. Well, not one that people listen to anyway. We have a podcast and you are listening to it. You can find it anywhere that you want to listen to podcasts. I'm talking about iTunes and Spotify and CastBox and Google Play.
Yeah, SoundCloud.
All the places that people listen to podcasts is there. Tell your friends. Go listen to that instead of your actual friend's podcast. Also, you can find us on social media at It's The Real on Twitter, at It's The Real on Facebook, at It's The Real on Instagram. We also have other podcasts called Two Jews and Two Black Jews Review the Movies, where we sit around and we review movies with the locks.
It's crazy.
It's crazy, and again, it's real. People listen to it.
That's right.
And
subscribe.
You tell your friends to listen to
it. It's got its own feed, so go there. Don't wait like you've been waiting forever to find it in between all these A Waste of Time with It's The Real episodes.
Also, it's the end of the episode. I still have not had ramen or pho. I would like some ramen or pho.
So go buy a mug.
Go buy a mug so I can afford some ramen and or pho.
Itsthereal.com/shop. Anything else, Joe?
Follow us on Twitter so that we can talk about documentaries.
Follow us on Instagram so we can, you know, do some more lives and you guys can jump in and ask us questions.
Yeah, but let's talk about like our brand or whatever. Like, let's talk about documentaries over at Twitter, at It's The Real. Or you can follow Wale and let him know where he can get some good ramen.
As always, not for real, for real.
For sure.
See you guys next week.